Now he's Superman, Marco muttered.
I was looking around. I guess I thought I might be able to see something from the air, Tobias said. I was looking for something that might be a Yerk pool.
The phrase sounded vaguely familiar. I remembered Visser 3 saying something about Yerk pools.
What's a Yerk pool?
I asked Tobias.
It's where the Yerks live in their natural state. Every 3 days, a Yerk has to leave his host body and go into the Yerk pool to soak up nutrients, especially Chondrona rays.
Marco and I exchanged a suspicious look. Neither of us knew any of this.
At the end, Tobias explained, when the Andalite told us all to run for it, I stayed behind for a few seconds. I guess maybe I was too scared even to run.
I shook my head. I knew better. Tobias just hadn't wanted to leave the Andalite alone. I think maybe the Andalite meant even more to Tobias than to the rest of us.
Anyway, he gave me visions, I guess you'd call them. Pictures, information, a lot of it, all at once, all jumbled. I haven't even started to sort it all out. But I do know about the Yerk pools and the Chondrona.
Marco held up his hand, silencing Tobias. Let me check the door, he said. He went to my door and peeked out into the hallway. All clear, he announced. Tobias gave Marco a questioning look. Tom, Marco said. He's one of them.
Don't make me hurt you, I warned him angrily. Tom is not a controller.
Either way, we should be careful, Tobias said. He lowered his voice. The Chondrona is a device that produces Chondrona particles. See, it's like this little portable version of the Yerk's own home sun. The Yerks need Chondrona particles to live, like a human needs vitamins or whatever. The Chondrona particles are beamed from wherever the Chondrona is and concentrated in the Yerk pool. Once every 3 days, every Yerk has to leave his host and go into the pool. They soak up the particles, and then they re-enter the host body.
What does this have to do with you flying around playing Superman? I asked.
Well, it seems dumb now, but I was thinking maybe I could see the Yerk pool.
He made a rueful smile. Saw a lot of swimming pools and some ponds. You get up there and you realize there are ponds and lakes and streams everywhere. But I didn't see anything special.
And what if you found some Yerk pool? Then what? Marco demanded.
Then we'd blow it up, Tobias said.
Wrong, Marco said. We decided not to get into this.
No, we decided not to decide yet, I said. Well, I've decided, Tobias said.
Suddenly the wimp is a hero, Marco sneered.
This time Tobias didn't blush.
Maybe I just found something worth fighting for, Marco.
You don't even fight for yourself, Marco said.
That was before, Tobias said softly. Before the Andalite. Before he died trying to save us. I can't let that go. I can't let him die for nothing. So whatever you guys decide, I'm going to fight.
Chapter 13.
We find the Yerk pool, Tobias said. And when we do, we blow it up and kill every one of those evil slugs.
I expected Marco to start yelling, but Marco is pretty smart. He could tell that Tobias had reached me with his talk about the Andalite, so he just smiled a little sneakily.
Remember that cop today? The one who was so interested in finding whoever was at the construction site? The cop was probably a controller.
What about him? I said.
Well, let's see. He invites you to join the sharing. And now along comes Tom, and suddenly he is very interested in whatever happened at the construction site. And guess what? Tom also invites you to join the sharing.
Tobias nodded in agreement.
Maybe this sharing is an organization for controllers?
Marco smiled. He's my best friend and all, but sometimes Marco really makes me mad.
We're pretty sure the cop is a controller, and I don't care what you say, Jake. I think Tom is too. So here's the deal. You want to get into this fight against the Yerks?
Marco asked me.
Fine. Let's see how much you want to do it when it turns out it's your own brother you have to destroy.
That stopped me cold.
It's not exactly some video game, is it?
Marco said.
This is reality. You don't know anything about reality, Jake. Nothing bad has ever really happened to you. You have this perfect family, like I used to have.
His voice cracked a little. He never talked about his mom's death. I realized he was right. I didn't know about reality, not the way reality had happened to Marco and to Tobias.
So maybe we just walk away from this, Marco said. Let someone else fight this fight.
Sorry about the Andalite, but I've got enough death in my family.
No, I said, surprising myself. The Andalite gave us the morphing power for a reason. It wasn't just for the fun of being a dog or a horse or a bird. He hoped we would fight.
Then maybe Tom is the enemy, Marco said. Maybe it's your own brother you'll end up destroying.
Yes, I said. My throat felt all tight. Maybe that's what will happen.
Maybe not. But the first step is to find out more. And I think maybe the way to do that is to check out this meeting of the sharing. Tonight. I'll call the others. Anyone wants to come? Cool. You want to stay out of it, Marco? That's cool, too.
He hesitated. He sent Tobias an angry look, but he said,
Okay. It's just a meeting, right? We go and see.
I'm in for that.
I called the others. Rachel agreed quickly. Cassie had to think about it for a little while, but she agreed too. I told Tom we were interested in attending the meeting. Me and Marco and Rachel and Cassie. We'd already decided Tobias would be there too, only in a different way.
Tonight's a great meeting to come to, Tom said enthusiastically. We're having a bonfire on the beach. You know, hanging out, playing games and stuff. We play night volleyball, which is so funny because half the time guys can't even see the ball. It's great. It's the best organization. You'll love it.
Listening to him, it sure didn't sound like the sharing was connected with the Yerkes. You couldn't really picture Visser 3 or a bunch of taxons playing volleyball.
I was thinking maybe we were all just nuts. The sharing was probably just like some new kind of co-ed Boy Scouts or something.
It wasn't that far to the beach, so we decided not to drive there with Tom. We walked. Tobias walked partway with us. Then he stepped behind a dark dune as we got close to the shore. A few minutes later, we saw a hawk take flight. There aren't many thermals at night, so he had to work to get altitude. But then I guess he found a decent enough updraft, because he soared up and away till he disappeared.
I have got to try that, Cassie said. It looks wonderful.
Yeah, I agreed. Ahead, the bonfire burned bright on the dark beach. People were all around it, playing, talking, eating. Kids from school, adults, people I didn't know, others I did.
Were they all controllers? I wondered. How could I ever know? And was my own brother one of them?
After about an hour of hanging out there on the beach, I was sure I was nuts. There was no way these guys were aliens. We played some volleyball, me and Tom together on one team. We ate the barbecue ribs they had. I mean, it was just like this normal, good time.
The sand was still warm. The night air was chilly, but near the fire it was nice.
Now you see why I enjoy this? Tom asked me.
It's cool, I said. I looked around at all the people having fun. I didn't realize it was so much fun.
Well, that's not all it is, Tom said. I mean, it's more than just fun. The sharing can do all kinds of things for you, once you're a full member.
How do you get to be a full member? I asked.
He smiled mysteriously.
Oh, that will come later. First, you become an associate member. Later, the leaders will decide whether to ask you to become a full member. Once you become a full member, the whole world changes.
At that moment, something weird happened. I was looking at Tom and he was smiling at me, but then his face kind of twitched. His head started to pull to one side like he was trying to shake his head, only he couldn't quite do it. For just a split second, there was a look in his eyes. Scared or something. He was looking right at me, and it was like some different person, some scared person, was looking out of those same eyes. Then he was back to normal, or what looked like normal.
"I have to go for a while now," he said. "The full members have a separate meeting. You guys stay here and have fun. Have some more of that barbecue. It's great, isn't it?"
With that, he was gone into the night. I felt like I had swallowed barbed wire. Marco and Cassie came over. They had just finished playing frisbee in the surf with some other kids. Marco was laughing.
"Okay," he said. "I admit it, I was wrong. These are just normal people having a good time, and Tom is not a controller."
I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. Marco was wrong. I knew what I had seen in Tom's eyes. He was trying to warn me. Somehow he had managed to gain control of his face for just a second before the yerk in his head had crushed him. Tom, the real Tom, not the yerk slug in his brain, had tried to warn me.
Chapter 14. "They're all going off to a separate meeting," I said. "All the full members. I'd sure like to know what goes on in that meeting." I struggled to sound normal, but my insides were churning.
"I saw people heading that way," Rachel pointed.
"Let's see if we can get close," I said.
"What's going on?" Marco asked. "I thought we just decided everything was normal here."
It was Cassie who answered him.
"Nothing is normal here," she said. "Can't you feel it?"
She shivered.
"All these so-called full members, they're all being so perfectly nice, so perfectly helpful. They're so perfectly normal, it's abnormal. And all the time their eyes are following you, watching you, like a hungry dog watching a bone."
"Creepy," Rachel agreed. "Like if you took cheerleaders, combined them with gym teachers, and made them all drink 10 cups of coffee."
"They are all just a little too happy, aren't they?"
Marco admitted. "People keep telling me how all their problems disappeared once they became a full member of the sharing. It's like some cult or something." "I'm getting into that secret meeting," I said. I had to know. I had to be dead sure. "Let's get away from the fire,
over behind that lifeguard stand."
"How are you going to get into the meeting?" Marco asked.
"They won't worry about some stray dog that's walking along the beach," I said.
"Some stray..." "Oh," Marco said.
"Good idea," Cassie said. "I'd do it too, but the only morph I can do is a horse. They would notice a horse."
I checked to see that no one could see us. I waved over my head. A few seconds later, Tobias came swooping silently out of the starlit sky. He landed on the lifeguard stand.
"What's up?"
"The full members are off in some private get-together," I told him. "Do you know where they are?"
"Of course. With these eyes, I can see the mice scampering through the dune grass. Nice, plump, tasty-looking things."
"Tobias, get a grip. Don't start eating mice just because you're in a hawk's body. What's next, roadkill?"
He didn't say anything. Maybe he was offended at my suggestion that he would ever eat roadkill. Or worse, maybe he wasn't offended.
"Where are the full members?" I asked.
"About 100 yards down the beach. There's a little bowl-like area formed by the dunes. There are people posted all around, though, like guards."
I nodded. "Good job. Tobias, you've been in that body for more than an hour. You need to morph back."
"No, I'll keep watch from above for a while longer," he said.
"No, Tobias," I said sharply. "You need to morph back. You've done what we needed you to do."
There is that little problem. I don't exactly have any clothes on."
"Marco has your clothes in a bag. Rachel and Cassie will turn away while you morph." Cassie grinned.
"I am going to have to teach you boys how to morph clothing."
Still, Tobias hesitated.
"I hate changing back. It's like going back into a prison or something. I hate it when I don't have wings."
"Tobias, you can always return to your hawk morph later,"
Rachel reassured him.
"Now come on, both of you. I'll look the other way so your delicate boy modesty isn't offended."
I took a deep breath. It was only my second morph. It still seemed totally ridiculous that I was even thinking about becoming a dog. But as I concentrated, I could begin to feel the itchiness and the squirmy feeling as Homer's DNA combined with the Andalite's technology and began to change me. At the same time, I could see fingers growing from the ends of Tobias's wings.
Keep a grip on your human side, Cassie warned me. We can't have you off chasing cats or whatever. You need to focus hard on staying in control.
I started to say, yes, I know, but it came out, roar, roar, roar. I was already too changed to make normal human speech. I thought my answer instead. Yes, I know, Cassie. Don't worry.
But I do worry, she said softly.
I nuzzled her hand with my cold nose and she patted my head. I set off across the sand. Cassie had been right to warn me. The dunes, the surf, the low chirping of seabirds and their hidden nests, all of it was so perfect for distracting my dog mind. I heard something breathing in the seagrass, and then it broke and ran. I was off after it before I could even think. It ran, and I chased. I think it may have been a chipmunk or something. I never could be sure because it found a hole and went diving in. I dug frantically in the sand for a while before my human brain realized, whoa, Jake, this is not what you're supposed to be doing. Stop it. I made myself walk toward the meeting. I could hear the murmur of voices. I started to creep closer, then I realized that was dumb. Dogs don't creep around, they just walk or run. If I went around acting like spy dog, that would make people pay attention. So I wandered along like any dog out for an evening stroll along the beach. My tongue lolled out of my mouth, my tail wagged occasionally. The only thing I had to be careful of was not to let Tom see me too clearly. After all, I looked exactly like Homer. Basically, I was Homer. I approached the edge of the area. There were high dunes all around. About 20 or 30 people were standing together. Unfortunately, with my weak dog eyes, I couldn't see them very well in the darkness, but I could hear them. I could hear them amazingly well. Sounds that I would barely have noticed with my human hearing were as loud as a stereo set on 9. And I could smell. It's funny about smell. As a human, you don't really get into it. But when I lay back and let my dog abilities come up, smell became as good as sight. Different, but just as good for some things. I heard Tom's voice, and I smelled a subtle combination of things that meant he was not too far away. There was a man on guard, but all he did was look down at me, then look away. No one cares about a stray dog. I was beginning to realize why the Andalite had given us the power to morph. There are things you can do as an animal that you could never do as a human. The members all seemed to be waiting for someone to arrive. I heard Tom say, "He should be here soon." "Wait, here he comes." There was a stirring, muttering sound. I heard footsteps approach. I moved closer, but stayed out of the light.
"Everyone quiet. We have problems," the voice said.
The voice. I knew that voice. It was the same voice that had been at that construction site. It was the voice that had said, "Just save the head. Bring that to me, and we can identify it." I crept a little closer. I had to look hard to see him with my dog sight. But then when he turned just the right way, I saw him. I recognized him. It was someone I knew, someone I saw every day at school. None other than Assistant Principal Chapman. My assistant principal was a controller.
"Item 1. We still have not found the brats who were at the construction site," Chapman said. His voice was hard. "I want them found. Visser 3 wants them found. Does anyone have any clues?"
For a moment, no one spoke. Then I heard a second familiar voice.
"It could have been anyone," Tom said. "But it might be the one who's my brother, Jake. I know he goes through the construction site sometimes. That's why I brought him here tonight. So we could either make him ours or kill him."
Chapter 15.
Either make him ours or kill him.
I felt like someone had punched me. I told myself that Tom was a human controller. Some slimy, snotty slug from another planet was in his brain controlling him. When he talked to me, it wasn't even Tom, not really. It was a Yerk. My brother.
one of them. Chapman, one of them. They were everywhere, everywhere. How were we going to stop them? How could we even try? If they could take my own brother from me, if they could take Tom, then how was I going to be able to stop them? It was insane. Marco was right. I think if I had been fully human right then, despair would have just overpowered me. But dogs don't know about human despair. It was Homer's simple, happy, hopeful mind that saved me. For a while, I just sort of let go and drifted into dog consciousness. I didn't want to think. I didn't want to be a human being. For a while, I just wandered around the dunes and smelled things. But I knew I had a job to do. After a while, I let go of the simple happiness of the dog and forced myself back into painful reality. I waited and listened some more to the meeting, but I was still so upset I didn't really track on a lot of what was being said. I just kept hearing it over and over in my head. Make him ours, or kill him. The one other thing that did stick in my mind was Tom discussing with some other guy, some other controller, the schedule for going to the Yerk pool. He'd just been and was feeling good, he said. He'd be heading back on Monday night. That was the slug in his head talking. The Yerk that controlled Tom needed to return to the Yerk pool. Then I heard another voice. Cassie. I slunk quickly around the back of a dune to get closer, but I could hear clearly. Cassie's voice, and another voice it took me a minute to recognize. It was the policeman. The same policeman.
Hey, what are you doing back here? The policeman demanded.
I was just looking for shells, Cassie said.
This is just for full members, the policeman said gruffly. Private business, you understand.
Yes, sir, Cassie said in her most humble voice. I got to where I could see them, although I have to tell you, dog sight is not exactly great. Everything is like an old TV with bad color and all blurry. The policeman was staring hard at Cassie. Cassie was trying to be brave, but I could smell the fact that she was afraid.
Okay, take off, the policeman said at last. But I have my eye on you. Get back with the others.
Cassie turned and headed away as fast as she could walk. I caught up with her. I guess seeing a dog come bounding out of nowhere startled her because she jumped. Oh, it's you, she said. Yeah, that was close. What were you doing there? She shrugged. Just wanted to make sure you were okay. I was safer than you were, I pointed out. We got back to the spot where Rachel, Marco, and Tobias were waiting. I didn't even want to morph back into my human body. I knew that I could just let myself go again, and in a few minutes my dog brain would forget why my human brain was sad. If someone would just throw a stick out into the surf, I could go after it. The water would make me happy. The chasing would make me happy. Now I knew why Tobias was so reluctant to leave his hawk's body. Being an animal could be a nice way to escape from all your troubles. I began to morph back into my own body. Cassie and Rachel turned and looked out toward the water. When I was completely myself again, I said, Marco, you were right. Tom is a controller. Marco did not look pleased about being right. I told them what Tom had said to Chapman about bringing me to the meeting to either use me or kill me. Wait a minute. Chapman is one of them too? Rachel asked. Our Chapman? Mr. Chapman, the assistant principal? I think he's some kind of a leader, I said. It was him the other night at the construction site. He was the one who told the Hork-Bajir just to keep the head.
That is so, Chapman, Marco said.
I suggest we get the heck out of here, Tobias said.
No, it's okay, I said. Chapman told Tom there was not to be any killing at a sharing meeting. They don't want any suspicious activities. He also said they couldn't just go around killing every kid who might have been at the construction site. They needed to be sure. That's decent of them, Rachel said dryly. Not really. Chapman just said that for a while longer, they still have to avoid attracting too much attention. A bunch of kids start turning up dead and people will definitely notice. He said they should just wait. Kids can't keep quiet for long about seeing aliens.
When the kids talk, the controllers will find them and get rid of them.
Except that we aren't going to talk about what we saw, Rachel said.
You got that right, Marco agreed. We aren't saying anything. We are forgetting everything we saw. We are getting on with our normal lives.
And leave Tom the way he is?
I demanded.
No way, never. He's my brother. I'm going to save him.
Just how do you figure you'll do that? Marco asked sarcastically. Let's see. It's you versus Chapman, the cops, a bunch of Hork-Bajir and Taxons, and, worst of all, that creep, Visser 3. All you can do to fight them is turn into a dog and bite their ankles. It's like being stuck in the most impossible video game ever invented.
I grinned, or at least I showed my teeth.
Yeah, it is, kind of.
But I'm pretty good at video games.
And he won't be alone, Rachel said. I'm in this too.
And me, Tobias said.
Me too,
Cassie agreed.
Swell, Marco said. So suddenly you're the Fantastic Four.
This isn't a comic book. This is real.
We heard the sound of people coming through the dunes. The meeting of the full members had broken up.
Everyone, quiet,
I said. We'll let this ride. For now. I said that to calm Marco down. I had no intention of letting it ride. I pulled Cassie aside. Listen, Cassie, I need an animomorph that will let me watch Chapman without him seeing me. What do you have at the farm? Cassie got quiet for a moment.
Let me think. We have a lot of injured birds, of course. We have the wolf with the broken leg. We have the wildcat with one eye.
I waited while she went down a list of all the animals in the wildlife rehabilitation clinic. Suddenly, Cassie snapped her fingers.
I wonder, how small an animal do you think we can morph?
I shrugged. I had no idea.
I may have something in mind, she said. It's not really in the clinic as a patient. It just sort of lives there. It's small. It can crawl up walls. It's fast, if you need to get away. And I guess it can hear and see okay.
Which is how I ended up in Cassie's barn later that night, crawling beneath cages full of sick buzzards and between a pair of jumpy deer, looking for lizards. Chapter 16. I did it Monday morning in my locker at school. I turned into a lizard. A green anole, to be exact. It's a member of the iguana family. Like you care. I waited till the bell rang for first period, which was English class. When everyone else was out of the hallway, I just climbed into my locker. I tried to act cool about it, just in case anyone was watching. The locker was about 2 inches shorter than me, so I had to crouch. And it was so tight, I couldn't move. The only light was from the 3 small ventilation slits. I could hear my heart pounding in the cramped, dark space. I was afraid. It was one thing to turn into a dog. I mean, it's weird, it's strange, but it's also kind of cool. Dogs are cool animals, but lizards?
I should have practiced, I muttered under my breath. I really should have practiced, like Cassie said.
I started to focus for the morphing. I remembered the way we had caught the lizard the night before last. We'd spotted it with a flashlight, and Cassie had put a bucket over it so it couldn't get away. It had been fairly creepy, just touching it to acquire its DNA pattern. Now I was going to become it. The first thing I noticed was that I suddenly had more room inside the locker. I didn't have to crouch down, and my shoulders weren't scrunched up anymore. I touched my face with one hand. My skin was looser than it should have been, and pebbly to the touch. I ran my hand over my head. My hair was almost all gone. Things began to happen very fast. The locker grew and grew around me. It was big as a barn, big as a stadium. It was like falling off a skyscraper and taking forever to hit the ground. I was standing on something sticky, as large as a boulder.
How had a boulder gotten into my locker?
But then I realized it was a wad of gum, an old chewed wad of gum stuck to the bottom of my locker. Gigantic drapes as big as the sails of a ship were falling all around me. They were my clothes. In the dim light, I could see two monstrous, misshapen things on either side of me. I could just make out the Nike swoosh and realized they were my shoes. They were the size of houses. And then, the lizard brain kicked in.
Fear! Trapped! Run! 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 Run!
I shot left. A wall! I scampered up, feeling my feet stick to it. Trapped! I jumped back. Another hard surface. Trapped! Run! 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 I fought to get control, but the lizard brain was panicked. It didn't know where it was. It wanted out. Out! Go toward the light, I ordered my new body. The ventilation slits. That was the way out. But the body was afraid of the light. It was terrified. I was still bouncing off the walls. I could not overcome the panic instincts of the lizard body. Go to the light, I screamed inside my head. And suddenly I was there. I poked my head out. And my body slithered after me. My tongue flicked out, and I got a weird kind of input from it. Like smell, only not quite. It kept flicking. I could see it shoot out of my mouth and lick the air. In the bright light, I realized how bad the lizard eyes were. I couldn't make sense of what I was seeing. Everything was shattered and twisted around. Down was up and up was down. Colors weren't even close to right. I tried to think. Come on, Jake. You have eyes on the side of your head now. They don't focus together. They see different things. Deal with it. I tried to make sense of the pictures using this knowledge, but they were still a mess. It seemed to take me forever to figure it out. One eye was looking down the hall to the left. The other was looking down the hall to the right. I was upside down, gripping the side of the locker, which was like a long gray field that wouldn't end. And all the time, the green Anoli brain was fighting me. Now that it was out of the dark locker, it desperately wanted to go back in. Chapman's office, I reminded myself. But where was it? Left. That way. Suddenly, I was off and running, straight down the wall. Zoom. Then, on level floor. Zoom. Around a scrap of paper twice as big as I was. The ground flew past. It was like being strapped onto a crazy out-of-control missile. Then my lizard brain sensed the spider. It was a strange thing, like I wasn't sure if I saw the spider, or heard it, or smelled it, or tasted it on my flicking lizard tongue, or just suddenly knew it was there. I took off after it, racing at a million miles an hour before I could even think about stopping. My legs were a blur, they moved so fast. It probably wasn't a huge spider, not if you were a great big human being. But to my lizard eyes, it looked as big as a small child. It was huge. I could see the multiple black eyes. I could see the individual joints in its eight legs. I could see the clicking, awful mandibles. The spider ran. I ran after it. I was faster. No! I screamed inside my head, but too late. My head jerked forward, fast as a striking snake. My jaws snapped, and suddenly the spider was in my mouth. I could feel it fighting. I could feel the spider's legs squirming and fighting to get out of my mouth. I tried to spit it out, but I couldn't. The lizard's hunger for that spider was too great. I swallowed the spider. It was like swallowing a whole canned ham, a canned ham that was fighting all the way down. No, 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 my brain cried in horror and disgust. But at the same time, the lizard brain was pleased. I could feel it become slightly calmer. That does it, I told myself. I am out of this morph. I wanted out of that horrible little body. I didn't care who saw me. I was going to morph back to human shape. Marco was right. It was insane to get involved in this. Insane! I heard the ground shake. It was a noise like a giant stomping across the land. It was a giant. There was a huge shadow in the sky. It was like someone was trying to crush me by dropping an entire building on my head. The shoe came down. I scampered left. Another shoe. My tail! The shoe was on my tail. I was trapped. Chapter 17. In panic, I tried to run, but my tail was caught. Suddenly, I was free. How had that? I realized what had happened. My tail had snapped off. Looking back, I saw it, still trapped by the giant shoe. It squirmed as if it were still alive. It wiggled like a worm on a hook. The shoe lifted and flew through the air again. I shot up the side of the wall and froze in place. The giant had not seen me. It had not tried to stomp me. It had been an accident. And now my tail. No, the lizard's tail. The giant walked on, shaking the ground as it went. I focused one lizard eye on the figure. It was like trying to make sense out of one of those carnival fun mirrors. But even so, I was pretty sure it was Chapman. I watched him head down the hall, and with all my power, I ordered my lizard body to follow him. I tried not to think about the spider in my stomach, or the fact that it was still not completely dead. I tried not to think about the fact that part of my body was back on the floor, jerking like it was still alive. I just raced along after Chapman, because Chapman might reveal something that would help Tom. I planned to follow Chapman to his office. I'd hide under his desk and listen to him make phone calls. I figured sooner or later he might let something slip about the location of the Yerk pool. Cassie and I had talked about it. She'd said it could take days of hiding in Chapman's office before we learned anything. Besides, we could only stay in a morph for 2 hours. And meanwhile, I would be skipping class. Sooner or later, I'd get in trouble over that. And the really funny thing is, when they catch you skipping class, you get sent to the assistant principal, Mr. Chapman. I could just imagine that scene. Sorry I skipped class, Mr. Chapman, but I've been in this lizard body watching you because I know you're a controller and part of a giant alien conspiracy to take over the Earth. I would have laughed, only lizards can't laugh, so I just followed Chapman as he marched down the hall. Suddenly he stopped. Were we at his office? I looked around as well as I could. It didn't look like the office. The spider gave a kick in my stomach. He opened a door. It swung right over me with a big rush of air. It went just above my head as I hugged the floor. I concentrated on making sense of the sights. Wait a minute. This was the janitor's closet, a mess of mops and buckets and cleaning solutions. What was Chapman doing? He went inside. I followed, careful to stay away from the high leather walls that were his shoes. I heard a loud click. He had locked the door behind him. It was a long way up from the floor, but I could more or less see him doing things to the sink faucet. I thought he grabbed one of the hooks they used to hang up the dirty mop heads. I was pretty sure he twisted it because I could hear a squeaking sound. And to my total and complete amazement, the wall opened. There was a doorway where the wall had been. Strange smells and stranger sounds wafted up from inside the doorway. Chapman stepped through. There were stairs just inside, heading down into a purple-lit pit. From far away, as if it came from 100 miles down, I heard a faint sound. It was a scream of fear and despair, a human voice crying out in the darkness of that horrible place.
No!
The voice moaned.
No!
I knew what the scream meant. I knew what was happening. Somewhere down there, a human being was feeling the Yerk slug slither inside its brain. Somewhere down there, a human being was being turned into a mindless slave of the Yerks. Chapman headed down the stairs. The door closed behind him. I had found the Yerk pool. It was right under my school. Chapter 18. Screams, I said. Human screams. They sounded far off, but that's what they were. My friends looked at me, all but Marco, who looked away. It was that same afternoon, right after school. We'd gone to the mall. We figured it was the best way not to look suspicious. No one thinks there's anything weird about kids hanging together at the mall. We were at a table in the food court, sharing some nachos. Ever since eating the spider, I'd had a desire to consume lots of junk food to help me forget. You were a lizard at the time, Marco pointed out. Who knows what you heard? I know, I said.
I can't stand the thought of what's happening to people down there, Cassie said.
She shuddered.
It's sickening.
We have to do something, Rachel said.
Yeah, let's rush right down there, Marco said. Then it can be us screaming.
I realized I had lost my appetite for nachos.
Marco, you can't just ignore what's going on, Rachel said.
Sure I can, he said. All I have to do is remind myself that, hey, guess what? I don't want to die.
That's it then?
Rachel demanded, outraged.
Just whatever is best for Marco? I don't think Marco is being selfish,
Cassie said.
Just the opposite. He's thinking about his father. about what would happen to his dad if Marco...
He's not the only one who's got people to worry about, Rachel said. I have a family. We all do.
Not me, Tobias said softly. He smiled his sad, crooked smile. It's true. No one gives a rat's rear about me.
I do, Rachel said. I was surprised to hear her say that. Rachel isn't exactly sentimental.
Look, I said, I'm not asking anyone else to go with me, but I don't have a choice. I heard that scream today, and I know Tom is going down there tonight. He's my brother. I have to try and save him.
I held out my hands, helpless.
I have to do it for Tom.
I'll go with you, Tobias said. For the Andalite.
There's no one else who can do anything to stop the Yerks, Rachel said. I'm scared to death just thinking about it. But I'm there.
Marco looked sick. He gave me a dirty look. He shook his head.
This is bad, he said. This is so bad. If it wasn't for Tom, I'd walk away.
Look, Marco, you don't have to, I started to say.
Oh, shut up, he snapped. You're my best friend, you jerk. Like I'm going to let you go face all this alone? I'm in. I'm in to rescue Tom. That's it. Then I'm done.
Only Cassie had remained silent. She was looking dreamily off over the heads of the mall crowd.
You know, back in the old days, I mean the real, real old days, the Africans, the early Europeans, the Native Americans, they all believed animals had spirits, and they would call on those spirits to protect them from evil. They would ask the spirit of the fox for his cunning. They'd ask the spirit of the eagle for his sight. They would ask the lion for his strength. I guess what we're doing is sort of basic, even though it was Andalite technology that made it possible. We're still just scared little humans trying to borrow the mind of the fox and the eyes of the eagle. Or the hawk, she added, smiling at Tobias. And the strength of the lion. Just like thousands of years ago, we're calling on the animals to help protect us from evil.
Will their strength be enough? I wondered.
I don't know,
Cassie admitted solemnly.
It's like all the basic forces of planet Earth are being brought into the battle.
Marco rolled his eyes.
Nice story, Cassie, but we're five normal kids up against the Yerks. If it was a football game, who would you bet on? We're toast.
Don't be so sure, Cassie said. We're fighting for Mother Earth. She has some tricks up her sleeves.
Good grief, Marco said. Let's all buy Birkenstocks and go hug some trees.
We all laughed, including Cassie.
Cassie is right about one thing, Rachel said seriously. The only thing we have going for us is this animal morphing thing. And so far, the only morphs we've acquired are a cat, a bird, a dog, a horse, and a lizard. I think we need a little more firepower. We should head for the gardens. We need to acquire more DNA from some animals that are not going to be easy to acquire.
I nodded. Yeah, I don't think the hawk, horse, and lizard team is going to impress the Yerks. Rachel's right. I think we have to head to the gardens. We need to get some help from Mother Earth's toughest children. I looked to Cassie. Can you get us in?
I can get in free, she said. You guys will have to pay, but I can use my mom's employee discount, so it'll be cheaper.
Oh, I'm sure we could talk them into letting us in for nothing, Marco said. Just tell them we're animorphs.
Tell them we're what? Rachel asked.
Idiot teenagers with a death wish, Marco said.
Animorphs. I tried the word out.
It sounded okay.
Chapter 19. We left straight from the mall, hopping a bus out to the gardens, which is clear across the city. On the way, I tried to catch up on my homework. I had missed a lot of classes that day, so I borrowed class notes from my friends. Rachel kept perfect notes. Tobias had terrible notes, with all kinds of little drawings in the margins.
It took a while before I could figure out what they were. They were buildings and people and cars, the way they looked from high up in the sky.
I don't really need to go in, Tobias said as we pooled our limited cash to buy tickets. I'm happy with just my hawk morph. I don't want to be anything else.
I think that's a mistake, Rachel said. Our one real weapon is the power to morph. We should acquire as many useful morphs as we can.
What kind of animal morphs are going to be able to deal with Visser 3 when he turns into that big monster that ate the Andalite? I asked. There was nothing in this zoo or any other that was going to kick that big monster's butt. Marco winked.
Fleas? No one can kill fleas. We'll itch him to death.
I had to smile.
So now you're suddenly Mr. Hopeful?
No, I'm just so scared I'm getting weird, he said. I haven't done this morphing stuff. You guys all have. I'm not even a full-fledged animorph yet. I'm still normal.
I still feel normal, Cassie said. She looked troubled.
Cassie, you can turn into a horse, Marco said. Very few normal kids can do that. It's different for Jake, turning into a lizard. He's always been a reptile.
I took a good-natured swing at Marco, but he dodged it. It was cool having Marco with us, even if he was giddy. It took about a half an hour to reach the main gate of the gardens. I climbed down off the bus, feeling nervous. Not at all like I usually felt going there. I mean, the gardens is just about my favorite place to go, normally. But normally I'm not going there to get personal with dangerous animals. The main part of the gardens is rides. They have all the usual stuff, like roller coasters, which are my personal favorite, and Ferris wheels and water slides. But they also have an animal part, which is like a zoo, only cooler. They do dolphin shows, and there's this whole section where you can get close to some of the safer animals. And this monkey habitat they have is like a whole monkey city, practically. Anyway, if I were an animal and I had to be in a zoo, I'd want to be there. Cassie led us to the main building, which holds all kinds of exhibits. It has everything but the really big animals that need lots of space. Those animals are farther out, mostly, in big grassy habitats that look like parks. Parks with walls and moats and fences around them. The main building is supposed to be like a rainforest, I guess. It's where they keep animals that need to be warm all the time. There's a pathway that winds around with tall tropical trees overhead, with bushes here and there between the exhibits. Some of the exhibits are tiny, and some are really big, like the area they have for otters. It has a waterfall and a water slide for the otters to play in. We were near the otter habitat when Cassie stopped.
Okay, now everyone stay together and try not to be too suspicious looking, she said. I'm taking you inside.
Inside where? Marco asked.
Well, the way it works is there are walkways behind all these exhibits. That's how they feed the animals and give them meds or whatever. Meds are medicines, sorry.
She pointed to an inconspicuous doorway.
Anyway, we can go in through there.
It was an odd change from outside to inside. One minute we were in this fake rainforest, the next minute we were in what looked like a hallway at school, only the smell was worse. Kind of damp and moldy and musty, more like the boys' locker room.
Okay, look, if any staff people stop us, the story is we're here to see my mom, Cassie said. Of course, it's so late in the afternoon she won't be here, I hope. Because if she finds out I've been dragging four of my friends around back here, well, I can't be saving the world from alien invaders if I'm grounded. Hopefully there won't be many staff people here at all.
We shuffled along the hallway, feeling like we definitely did not belong, which we didn't. On either side of the main hall, there were paths that led to the different exhibits. Unfortunately, the doorways to the exhibits just had numbers on them. I knew we'd have to rely on Cassie's knowledge to find our way around. Behind some of those doors were animals you didn't want to just walk in on.
How do you guys feel about gorillas? Cassie said.
She had stopped by one of the numbered doors.
This is Big Jim's cage. He just came over from another zoo, so he's in his own private environment for now. He's very gentle.
Slowly it dawned on me what Cassie was saying. Oh, you mean, does one of us want to acquire his DNA?
That is why we're here, Jake,
Rachel pointed out. She batted her eyes at Marco.
How about you, Marco? Haven't you always wanted to be a big, hairy guy?
Marco didn't look like he was crazy about the idea, but I knew how to handle him. Maybe Marco should try something easier for his first morph, I said. You know, like a cuddly little koala or something. That did it.
Koala?
Marco said, giving me a dirty look.
Open that door, Cassie.
He hesitated.
You said gentle, right?
Gorillas are extremely gentle, Cassie said.
Then in a quieter voice, she added,
unless you make them mad.
Cassie opened her backpack. She took out an apple and handed it to Marco.
Here, you just open the door. The way it's set up, none of the visitors will be able to see you unless you walk clear out into the cage. Besides, there's an extra security gate, so he can't just jump out and you can't just walk in. So we just open the door and hope Big Jim feels like eating.
Behind the door was a second door of steel bars, with a little cutaway section for the handlers to shove the food through. The entire door opening was concealed behind a fake rock ledge, so it wasn't visible to the people looking into the cage. But Big Jim noticed us right away. He climbed heavily down from his perch on a rock ledge and took a good look at us through the bars. Big Jim was definitely big. He had fingers the size of my wrist. But Jim didn't seem to mind us being there. Mostly, he seemed interested in Marco's apple. He looked Marco over, snorted like he wasn't impressed, and then held out his hand.
Hand him the apple, Cassie directed. He wants the apple.
I loved your work in King Kong versus Godzilla,
Marco told the ape. He stuck his hand through the bars and held out the apple. With surprising daintiness, the gorilla lifted the apple and began inspecting it closely.
Hold his hand, I said.
Yeah, right, Marco laughed. When you acquire DNA, the animal goes into a kind of trance, I said. Go ahead, grab his hand and concentrate.
Marco tentatively touched the gorilla's wrist. Nice monkey.
The gorilla ignored him. Big Jim was much more interested in the apple than in any of us.
Concentrate, Rachel urged.
Marco closed his eyes. The ape closed his eyes.
This is so cool, Tobias commented. He realized that gorilla could pull Marco apart like he was a paper doll? Look at those arms!
Marco opened one eye.
Tobias, being terrified gets in the way of concentrating, so how about if you shut up about his arms?
Suddenly I heard a whirring sound. I looked down the hall, then back. It was one of those electric carts, like a golf cart. It was coming toward us.
Just act natural, Cassie hissed.
Marco slipped out, and she slammed the door on Big Jim.
As long as it isn't a security guy, we're probably okay.
The cart came up to us. Its driver was a man wearing a stained tan lab coat over his jeans. In the back of the cart were two large white plastic buckets full of something brown and horrible smelling.
Hey, you're Cassie, right? The doc's kid? How's it going?
Fine,
Cassie said. She waved casually, and the man drove right on past.
That was easy, Rachel said. He didn't even seem to care that we're back here. Well, where next? Cassie wondered.
We were at a four-way corner. There were blank, white-painted hallways in all directions. An electric golf cart was parked there, too.
What are we near?
I asked. Cassie thought for a moment.
Okay, that walkway leads to the outer exhibits. That one leads to the offices and storage facilities. These two go around the main building exhibits. We're close to, let me see, bats and snakes that way, the jaguar and the dolphin tank that way.
Rachel started down the hallway to our right.
Dolphins! I love dolphins.
Wait, Cassie said, trotting after her.
What are we going to do with dolphin morphs?
I think we should go out to the big exhibits, Marco said. Let's get serious about this. We need firepower. Come on.
Let's stick together,
I said as Marco started down the hall. I reached out to grab him before he got too far away. And that's when the voice yelled,
Hey! Hey, you! What are you kids doing back here?
I saw a guy in a brown uniform.
Security! Cassie yelped. Oh, man, they'll take us all into the office. They'll call my mom. I do not want to explain this to her.
Split up, I said, trying to sound like a leader.
Just like at the construction site, one guy can't get us all.
This guy looks like my grandfather, Rachel said. Not like that Hork Bajir that was after us.
You kids, hold on!
Oh man, oh man, Cassie said. With that, she took off down one hallway. Rachel and Tobias went after her.
Marco was already 20 yards down the other hall, the one that led out to the large exhibits. I ran to catch up. The guard reached the corner. I saw him glance toward Tobias and the girls. Then he looked at me and Marco. I guess Marco and I looked more suspicious because he chose us.
Stop! You kids better stop!
Let's grab the golf cart,
Marco said.
Steal a golf cart? If we don't take it, that guard will.
Good point. We jumped in the cart. Marco slid behind the wheel. He turned the key to on. He looked at me.
Just like driving bumper cars, right?
Only you try not to hit anything. He put his foot down on the pedal. The electric motor made a whirring sound, and we took off, straight toward the wall. Bam!
Hey, try steering,
I yelled. We backed up and took off again. We picked up speed, enough to pull away from the guard, but when I looked back, he was still jogging after us.
He's going to have a heart attack, I said.
Which way?
What?
Which way?
I turned around to face forward. We had reached a T-corner.
Right, I yelled.
Naturally, Marco turned left. I nearly fell out. Almost immediately, we reached another corner. This time, Marco did choose right, and I did fall out of the cart. I hit the linoleum and rolled. Then I was up and racing to catch the cart.
What are you doing?
Marco demanded when he saw me.
Quit playing around!
I just gave him a dirty look and climbed back in.
I think we lost the guard, Marco said.
I'm fine, thanks for asking, I said. Just a few bruises, maybe a cracked skull.